This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast with me, Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA, and this is my mentor and county training officer also for Somerset FA, Richard Mellon.
Hello, Darren.
Now, before we start, I think it's worth pointing out a couple of things. Firstly, we're on location in Richard's kitchen tonight, and the reason for this is because my little home studio is going through some improvements, so we're having to make shifts. So you may hear phones going off, you may hear doorbells, Rich's daughter may come running in with the dog, Lynn, your other half, may come stumbling through the door because she's out on the beer tonight.
There is that possibility.
There's an all manner of things which may happen, which could make an entertaining podcast. Plus, I think it's worth pointing out, because obviously this is audio, not visual, Rich, you're sporting a growth under your nose.
Yeah, the growth is for Movember, and I'm sure those listeners will understand what Movember means.
Yes, and a great cause, and good work on doing that, by the way. It's just bizarre seeing you with a moustache, mate, it really is.
It's for a good charity, so that's the reason for doing it.
And hello to you if you're doing exactly the same. I know there's a lot of... It's actually really pleasing to see how many in sport, how many people in sport do get behind the Movember charity fundraiser.
Yes, there's a lot of our colleagues that do it. I know a lot of the select group referees and Football League colleagues are doing it, and one or two other colleagues. So thanks very much, everybody, for supporting the Movember course and the charity, which I think in part supports prostate cancer. So, you know, there's good reason to be involved and take an interest in it. So that's enough of me for the moment, Darren, but you're carrying a cold, I sense.
Yeah, got a bit of a snivel thing going on. Man flu. Women don't understand man flu. They just don't get it.
Man flu. Yeah.
What it does to us, how it makes us feel. Anyway, let's move on.
It can strike you down.
Oh, terrible.
From grassroots to the World Cup.
This is the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
So, if you're a first-time listener to the podcast, thanks very much for listening. We're online at refereesworld.co.uk. You can listen through the website. You can also listen via iTunes. Just go to iTunes, type in Referees World, and then you can sign up and subscribe. And every time we release a new podcast, you'll be notified. You can download it and listen to it on your iPhone, your iPad, your iWatch, anything that's got I in front of it, you'll be able to listen to it on. We're also on Twitter, and you'll find us at Referees World. So thanks for the new follows. We've got loads and loads, but too many to mention. Got a couple of... it's the first one that comes through. It's the dog.
That's my dog walking across the floor.
This dog is called Stinky Dog, by the way. Brilliant. Stinks.
Good boy.
Referees World, at Referees World is how you'll find us on Twitter. And we'll start with some tweets in just a second. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/Referees World Podcast. So I felt it was quite amusing. This tweet came in a couple of hours ago. It's from Andy Harms. Hello, mate. It says, if a player squares up to an opponent and licks his face, what would you give, a red or a yellow? That's a great question. I love that.
Is that red as in strawberry, yellow as in custard? Rhubarb and custard.
Yeah.
That's quite... I wonder why the question is posed. Do you know the background to that?
Well, I'm kind of guessing... That's all I've seen is that tweet. I'm kind of guessing that this is something that's happened during a game.
Okay, who's asked the question?
Andrew Harms.
Well, Andrew, I mean, at the end of the day, you could call it certainly unsporting at minimum, but... To the person who's had their face licked, could be regarded as offensive, and certainly it's insulting to somebody's person. But I would not tolerate it, to be perfectly honest. What's your thoughts, Darren, when you saw that email?
When I saw the tweet, I laughed. I thought it was hilarious. But it all depends on the nature of the game, because that person squaring up could have caused a reaction, a defensive reaction from the opponent without realising what was going to happen. And if you didn't see it full on, it may look like it's actually somebody trying to headbutt somebody.
Well, let's go a little bit further. If that did happen, I wonder what the person who was the victim, I wonder what they did.
Again,
I wonder if Andrew wants to get in contact and let us know a little bit more about it. You ask about a red or a yellow, Andrew, and I would go for red personally.
Really?
Yeah, because of the nature of it, I don't think that's acceptable. Unless that's two brothers on opposite sides, why would they? Why would a player want to lick another player's face?
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same situation as if a player was to bite somebody. Not quite aggressive as biting, but you know that's
as an assessor. That's an what would you expect the referee to do if you saw that happening?
Minimum yellow,
depending on the nature of the game.
A minimum caution, please. You know, but obviously there are situations to take into consideration, but and we don't know what the background of this was. It's only a question that's been posed to us from Andrew. So, Andrew, perhaps you'd like to get back in contact
with
us.
Do.
And
please do.
Give us a little bit more information. Let's build up this and see if we can give some clear indication and clarification on what you should do. But you know what my personal opinion is off the cuff. Not acceptable.
I want to lick your face, Rich. I really
no.
do. I can't believe that we've actually started a podcast by talking about people's licking each other's faces.
It's
a very good question.
You can't say it won't happen.
No, brilliant.
You can't say
genius.
Never, can you?
Here's another tweet. It's from Frank Smith. Says, is the retirement age for referees still 45 for FIFA and 48 for Premier League? If so, what are the rules about extending careers?
Okay, I can confirm from my knowledge that the retirement age for FIFA referees is 45. But there's not an official retirement age for our select group Premiership referees. And if you think back only a few months ago, Peter Walton is now retired, and Peter was, I think, 51. Mark Halsey is currently 51. I'll be careful. I'm not sure how old Phil Dowd is, but Phil is getting certainly late 40s, as far as I'm aware.
I thought you were going to say he's getting on a bit.
No, sorry, Phil. I don't mean to be rude to you. But there's no official retirement age for our Premiership referees, as opposed to a few years ago when there was. And I was part of that situation as a PGMO official at the time. I reached the tender age of 45 in February of a particular year. Then they changed the age limit and went up to 48 within the 6 months after I retired. And then ageism and European legislation cut in, and ageism was written out of retirement.
I was going to say, it seems like a bit of an odd thing, because even at 45, you can still be fit as a fiddle. And the experience that the leagues would be losing through people retiring at that age would be it's quite a loss, isn't it?
Well, if I talk personally and carefully about my personal involvement as a referee at 45, I felt I was as fit at 45 as what I'd ever had been when I was playing. And I played until I was 28, 29 before I took up the whistle. And through the demands of football, I became much fitter. And at 44, 45, I was running well. At that time, we were doing bleep tests. And I recall doing level 11.3 for bleep tests. So I was quite proud of that, and my determination to succeed and push on was always there until I knew what the retirement age was at that time, and that's what took effect on my career. But you rightly point out that some of our colleagues are extremely fit now. I mean, if I use all of our select group senior mature referees, mature in age I refer to, they are very fit. They are very fit guys,
and assistants as well,
and the assistants, of course. Like I say, I don't wish to take any attention away from the assistants, but we did talk about select group referees, and they are a very, very fit bunch of people. They are very athletic in some of their movement, they do match the demands of a very quick Premiership fixture list.
There you go, Frank. Hopefully that's answered your question. And finally then, this is from Big Joe Ifill. Says, I have a question. What colour are the referees' boots? If you're getting assessed, can you be marked down if they're not black? I can add a little piece here. When I first started refereeing, I actually had a pair of boots that I was using because I'd had them because I was playing in them, and they were silver. And I was advised from somebody in quite an important position to get rid of them and buy some new boots.
Yes,
you'll be classed as a showman, and it doesn't do you that much good.
I think you're absolutely right there by using the word showman. I mean, for refereeing purposes, we are instructed to wear a kit that is primarily black with a bit of white. So boots do come under that. I do know of some new referees that have taken up refereeing, and because they were previously players, they had their playing boots still, and so consequently in that sort of probationary period, you know, wearing different coloured boots I suppose would be accepted, but in the long term, referees should avoid wearing coloured boots, because if you want to draw conversation or draw comment, should I say, from players and spectators, then that's probably one of the best ways in which to do it. Imagine a referee going out there wearing royal blue boots or red boots, red Adidas boots. You will get, you know, ridicule, you will get comments, and you will get some nasty comments as well.
You're going to get the nasty comments anyway, so you don't really need to draw the attention to yourself by wearing different colour boots. Hopefully that answers your question, Joe. Referee's World. It's the Referee's World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellin. We're online at refereesworld.co.uk. You can listen to us on iTunes as well. And if you want to get in touch with us, go through the website, drop us a little line, and we'll see what we can do in terms of replying to your questions and your seemingly endless list of demands. Right, still to come then, we've got some match incidents to talk about. I want to talk about abandonment. Now, the reason I want to mention this, Rich, is because, as you know, you were there. I had an abandonment situation recently. A local game in the Somerset County Premier League, Street Reserves versus Ilminster Town on a Wednesday night. If it wasn't for the rain, the conditions would have been great because it was a nice, crisp night. The lights were on and everybody loves those night games. But unfortunately, it was the rain which killed it all off.
Well, prior to the game, I mean, the conditions were ideal, as you've described. And it was so disappointing as me as a spectator and watching you and the guys out there refereeing and lining, that when the rain started coming down, you know, you didn't think any more of it other than a quick shower. But it just kept coming and coming and coming and never stopped. And, you know, at the end of the day, I wasn't sure how it would influence the game, but correctly, you had to make a decision.
Yeah,
you know, for the safety of the players, wasn't it?
Yeah, it got to a point where it was just turning into a quagmire right in the centre of the pitch and field of play even.
What sort of... let's try and gauge this, because there was no doubt about the pitch was playable before, wasn't it?
You know, yeah,
the pitch was great.
The weather leading up to it, the couple of days leading up to it, was a bit suspect. We'd had rain on and off occasionally, and I think there was two nights before a game had already been called off because of the weather. They didn't want to sort of go ahead and ruin the pitch even more.
Yeah,
and it was kind of touch and go at the beginning of the game if there was going to be more rain on the way. Okay, but like I say, conditions were very good. Had it stayed dry, but it, like you said, it just continually, it just stopped, just continued.
It was incessant rain, wasn't it?
I've never played football in rain like that. I mean, it was so hard. You were in the little auditorium bit, weren't you?
Yeah, we were in the stand on the far side, and you know, at the time of the rain coming down, we all took shelter and we were sort of making fun of it, as you do. But the rain just kept coming for 20, 25 minutes,
it was
solid.
Consistent.
And like I say, the abandonment in the end was the correct decision for the right reasons.
And we literally abandoned it pretty much on the stroke of half-time as well. And I think the decision straight away was, OK, we're not coming out for the second half.
Yeah. Let me ask a couple of questions, Dara, about how you got to your decision and what was the influences, which obviously we know what the influences were. But let's just confirm a few things here. At what stage did you think that there could be a problem, you know? It started raining. I don't think you could have been too worried, other than getting a bit wet and thinking you might have to change your kit at half time. But you know, at what stage, when it began raining and didn't seem like it was stopping, did you have any concerns? What happened?
I think when it first started to rain, it started, then it slowed down a bit, and then it picked up, and then it picked up momentum, and it was doing that for a while. It was sort of a bit stop start, but continuous, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then gradually, in the 20 minutes leading up to before I made the decision, it just got worse and worse and worse. And at this point, I've been thinking about it for about 10-15 minutes, and I was thinking, right, do I or don't I? Do I, don't I? How far am I away from half-time? What's the state of the pitch like? Okay, it's getting worse. And what really made the decision to me to call it off was when I started to notice players going in for a challenge, okay, using the conditions of the pitch to slide in, obviously making things a little more
dangerous. Were they sliding in or surfing?
Well, a bit of both, really, I think. I mean, there was a couple of instances. I noticed some challenges that weren't challenges. Two players were going for the ball. There was an attempt to get the ball, but because the pitch was so bad, the player that was going for it initially slipped, made contact with the opponent. The opponent then thinking, hang on, he's just fouled me, referee. What's going on here? And there was purely because he slipped up. So that could have caused some problems amongst the players. So that was the point where I thought, no, enough's enough now.
Okay, so clearly then...
And then pretty much when every player was saying, come on, how long we got now, ref, how long we got?
Clearly then, the conditions deteriorated to the extent whereby the movement of the ball or the momentum of the ball was influenced and slowed up, and it didn't go into the expect areas when it was being played along the ground. So players were then expecting it to be in particular positions, and they then misjudged challenges as a consequence because it wasn't where they expected. Would that be fair to
analyze
that? Yeah, so
I think visibility was getting pretty poor.
I was going to ask about that. With the visibility, I mean, from where I was, I couldn't see the assistant referee on the far side, and that assistant referee on that occasion was Kieran Sammons. And you know, that he must have had visibility problems. If we can't see him, you know, where what was the extent of his visibility onto the field of play to assist you to making accurate decisions? And let's talk about offsides to the ultimate extent, whereby if he's got an offside decision on the far side from his position, does he have a problem? Is it then influencing the game and decision making and judgments, and ultimately again players' movement and challenges?
I think as well both assistants were doing exactly the same thing as well, and that's running onto the pitch at times because the line that they were running was just soaked up.
It was very boggy in the end. I was watching Brian Lee on our side, and Brian, for much of the first half, 25 minutes at least, was in a nice position behind the touchline, crabbing along when he could, and extended sprint when he could to get to the goal line. But then when the conditions started changing, Brian's underfoot conditions were hampered, and he wasn't able to get accurate positioning to stay in line with the last outfield defender. So he went onto the field of play to get out of those boggy conditions so he could actually keep up with that last outfield defender going forward and going backwards, and he was still able to make accurate judgments. But ultimately you had to make that decision for player safety and abandon the game.
One thing I wanted to ask you was, do you think I called it off at the right time, or should I have called it off earlier?
It was never apparent that you got the timing wrong. It never came across like that, because players were very, very cooperative to the extent that it wasn't noticeable that, you know, when you blew the whistle, I thought, all right, half time. And then someone said, no, the referee's abandoned it. And I thought, all right, OK. So we all then congregated into the change rooms, and you advised us what you'd done. So, you know, the harmony between everybody was perfect. You know, there was nobody dissenting the decision. Everybody had sort of been out there, and they knew the extent of the conditions had deteriorated to the extent that it was incessant rain, which affected the field of play, and it became unplayable. And so consequently... your decision was probably the best decision you've ever made.
Thanks, mate. At least it was right. Thanks for the support. Anyway, we pile into the change room, and literally we're standing there soaking wet, and Rich walks in with a recording device, and this is what happened.
The game has just been abandoned after how many minutes, referee, please?
It was officially 45.
Officially abandoned at 45 minutes. The pitch is now unplayable. The referee, for your information, is...
me.
It's all about you. It's all about you, Cullum.
Darren Cullum. Okay, so here we are. We've had two abandonments this season, Darren. What's your thoughts on this one?
My initial thoughts straight away are that I don't think any club's going to want me at their pitch anymore, because every time I turn up, we have to abandon a game. But yeah, the rain obviously kicked in halfway through the first half, and then it just gradually got worse and worse.
What were your considerations?
Well, it was it was swamping up a lot in the middle. The lines that my two wonderful assistants for the evening were chewed up. Brian here, say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Thank you. Brian was running onto the field of play to avoid the the quagmire. Kieran, who was on the other line,
hello,
had exactly the same thing.
Well, I just want to make a comment here, Darren. I think you should have asked for the roof to be closed before the game started.
Yeah, it is reminiscent of the
you know, this England-Poland all over again, but there we go.
How shocking a streak to not have the roof shut.
So let me say, let's just try and cap this. What were your thoughts as regards the decision, and when did you start thinking that the game was going to be in doubt?
Probably about 20 minutes to go. It was, the problem is, the rain was coming down heavy, then it was easing off, and then it was coming down heavy and easing off, and I thought, well, if we can get to half time, then we can make an official decision then. And then the last sort of 5 minutes,
were there punters on the field of play?
Yeah.
Okay, and like, were that. Players using the conditions to create sliding challenges?
Yeah, they were trying to, and there was a couple of situations where players were coming in for a challenge and slipping before they got to the challenge, and that was creating contact with the opponent, and the opponent thought it was a...
So then there's player safety.
Yeah. Can I just say we've got some colleagues here at the moment?
Yes, you can.
Kev, come and introduce yourself.
Can we all get out of the shower?
I've got Kev, who's level 5 injured. All right, Kev?
Yeah, not bad.
How's the injury?
Bit sore. Hello?
This is Robin. Robin, level 5. And we've got a level 3 here, Adam Penwell, who we actually spoken to before.
We were stood there saying, if anyone goes down injured, then none of us are coming on. The conditions were awful. Obviously, you had a call to make. You made the right decision. At the end of the day, it's ultimate paramount for yourself is safety of the players. And it was getting unsafe. It was too wet.
You're at level 3. Have you had to call off a game before in situations like this? Because it's the first time for me.
No. Funnily enough, never in these conditions. I've had conditions like this, but where it's maybe been for 10 minutes and then it's died off. The level tonight is just getting worse and worse. And the problem is, the longer you leave it and the more you gamble, the more chance it's going to be an injury, a serious injury, and ultimately it's going to be the referee's fault.
Yeah.
And like I said, obviously the safety of the players, you made the right call. And as you can see by the player reaction when you called the game off, there was no player that come running to you and said he wanted the game to continue.
This is the Referees World podcast.
And if you do have any other questions or you have any other abandonment instances that you'd like to tell us about, why don't you tweet them at Referees World, or you can post them on our Facebook page, Referees World Podcast. You can also email through the website, refereesworld.co.uk. Right, still to come then, we're going to talk advice on hair clips. Okay, in just a second. Here's one for you. I posted this on the Facebook page a few weeks ago. I had some really interesting answers. I love this, Rich. It's a match incident, and it's something I heard being discussed on the radio. Okay, here we go. Attacker handles the ball to control it just before he scores. Most of the players see it and appeal, but the referee awards the goal despite all the protests. The scorer then tells the referee and admits to what had happened, asking not to allow the goal to stand. What does the referee do? Now, first of all, I think you have to commend the player for his honesty. But in terms of... what's the official line on it, Rich?
Well, pressure from other players is what prompted him to own up to the referee. Let's think about this one, because there is some good player honesty on this occasion, and far too often we knock players for not being honest. I would be inclined to accept the word of the player and award a free kick. As regards anything else from that, that would be hard to make a judgment, because all our judgments as referees are based on what we see. And arguably, because he hasn't seen the handball, he doesn't have to give the handball. Mm. But we've talked about player honesty, and I think the word of the player could be accepted on this occasion and to award a free kick to the opposition. So that would be the most simplest format to explain how we go about it. I do know that some of our followers on Twitter have made comments about should the player have been cautioned.
I was going to say, I think that was my point. You know, he's admitted to it. It was deliberate. He controlled it. Should it be a caution?
Well, that was Kevin Hopper's view. He said, what about a caution for the player for deliberate handball? Well, the judgment of handball has to be considered deliberate or not. And on this occasion, the player has admitted that he handled the ball. So it's deliberate. And that's the judgment that you make about handball. Now, whether or not you regard it as unsporting and it should be sanctioned with a caution, that's the difficulty here. And if you don't see it as unsporting behaviour, then I don't think you should be given a caution.
I think it's punishment enough to disallow the goal anyway.
I'm not so sure I agree with the description of punishment enough. The correct decision has been achieved. That's my interest there.
Imagine if that player had already been on a caution.
Ooh. See how we as referees, we go a little bit deep sometimes? You know, because Kevin has mentioned on Twitter about what about a caution for deliberate handball. Hmm. Well, who's decided that it was deliberate? The player's owned up to handball. The referee hasn't seen it. So, referee, are you obliged to give handball just because the player's told you? Otherwise, you know, have a look at other situations. Another player turns around and says, referee, he pushed me. So, are you going to take his word? You know, so, you know, you're going into some not difficult areas, but some unknown areas, perhaps. And I just think that, you know, you're going to take the word of the player on this occasion that he handled the ball. He admitted that he handled the ball and give a free kick. But as regards anything else, as regards a sanction, that's very, very difficult. And I don't think I would promote that idea on this occasion. You know, so what do you do? Dave Cryer comes on and says, disallow the goal. Well, that's, yeah, I agree with that. Call the captains over to explain the situation and say that from your angle you couldn't see the handball and the player has admitted to the offence and doesn't want the goal to stand. Okay, let's agree to that, and I think that's, you know, really commendable, as you say, by the player. Restart play with a direct free kick to the opposing team, and I think that's as simple as that, and that's a good way of putting it from Dave Cryer.
So imagine if that happened and the direct free kick went straight into the back of the net.
Oh, damn.
I'm just, well, this is the sort of thing that you would throw at me.
Yeah, windy day. It's a windy day.
Yeah.
But, I'm not so sure if we should go down this line. But it's the next phase of play.
Yeah.
And so, consequently, we've got one decision correct because of player honesty. The next phase of play, if the ball goes down the end of, you know, if the goalkeeper, if a defender wellies it down the other end and it ends up in the back of the goal very quickly, that's the next phase of play, and you've got a goal on your hands.
Yeah.
One goal disallowed at the end because of player honesty. No infringement at the other end, and you get a goal. I just want to make a comment about a couple of other tweets that have been on there. Ryan Owens comes in and he says, he handled it, but did he do it so it was deliberate? Okay, that's the judgment we make. Make sure that when you're making a judgment of handball, that you recognise it as deliberate handball. But a deliberate handball doesn't have to be sanctioned with a caution. It all depends on the field, where on the field of play the handball occurs and what it actually does. Is it stopping a good attacking potential? Then maybe you might introduce a sanction. But if it's one of those where the arm is out to the side rather than above the head, there is a different circumstance in the situation to consider. So, you know, let's not think that every handball, because it's deliberate, has got to be cautioned. That's not what we're saying. But let's just make sure that we get the right decision. And when making the judgment of handball, it is deliberate. And that's all you're asking. Is it deliberate or is it not? Before we leave that one, Darren, could I just mention for the benefit of those that remember, and it wasn't that long ago, Thierry Henry.
Do you know, when we were talking about this incident, that is the first thing that sprang to mind was him in that against Ireland, wasn't it?
Now, let me say to you, a totally, totally different playing circumstance. This is a World Cup qualifier, France versus Ireland. I think it was a playoff, if I remember.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and Thierry Henry, on the blind side of the referee, deliberately handled the ball.
Everybody in the world saw that, apart from the referee.
Kept the ball in play. Pulled it across the goal and France scored. I think the score was 1-0, and that was the winning goal. So, you know, circumstances are different, and clearly for what Thierry Henry did on that occasion, if it had been detected, I feel sure he would have been cautioned because of what he was.
He would have had to have been cautioned.
Yeah.
If you do want to get in touch about any other sort of match incident, please feel free, and we'd like to sort of stir and chew the fat over it as well. Right, we've got some advice on hair clips in just a second, and then we're going to hear from the FA's Roger Vaughan and Dimo Harab, because we took a trip up to Wembley the day before the cup final. It was a good day out, wasn't it, Rich?
It was a good day, and we met the cup final officials.
Yeah, it was really random. We were in the middle of the interviews.
They interrupted
our
podcast.
Yeah, they did. How rude. How dare they? Yeah. Dowdy, how dare you?
Phil Dowd and his team, who had a good game that day in the cup final. We met them, and that was nice. That was a nice little extra that we didn't expect. But it was a good day, and we had a good interview. which has been heard with Ian Blanchard. That's already been released. And now we're releasing the chunks of the interviews with Roger Vaughan and Dean Mo'Arab.
And we're going to hear from both of those at the end of this. But first, let's move on to this advice about hair clips. OK, advice about hair clips. Rich, can you elaborate, please?
Yeah, this is more on the technical side of law and will be regarded under Law 4 and players' equipment. But the question was posed about should players be allowed to wear hair clips? Now, let me say to you, when we talk about hair clips, arguably we would be talking about ladies' football, women's football. But no, that's not the case, because it is known that men with long hair will tie it back, will use clips, grips or whatever. And so that poses a problem as regards should they be allowed to wear it. Now, if I just pose the question to you, Darren, you're doing a pre-match inspection, and one of the players, you're doing a female game in this case, let's make it as easy as possible, and the lady's hair, the fringe net will drop into her eyes, and to keep it out of her eyes, she puts a couple of hair clips, just the thin hair clips, mm-hmm. just around beside the back of her ears. What's your first thoughts when you see those?
I ask them to take them out.
You do?
Yeah.
You do, okay. Now, I know some of our colleagues are uncertain of what to do here. Now, hair clips can come in different sizes, different formats, different, what can one say? I don't want to say different metals, because it's not metals, but they're plastic, they can be wooden.
They're a danger. I think they're a danger to the player themselves. Yeah. I wouldn't like to see this happen in a game, but you don't know that a player who's angry over something might use that as a kind of weapon to a certain degree.
I suppose that could be used in that way. But I think the question was posed because a player was wearing a hair grip, a slide on the side of the head, and it was a plastic one on this occasion, and the ball hit the player on the side of the head and caused a nasty injury. And then the referee was questioned about why he allowed the player to play with hair clips. And so consequently, there's now been a clarification of hair clips. And I've got the answer here via the office of Roger Vaughan. And thanks very much to Roger for doing that. And I just quote law here. It says, Law 4, players' equipment and specific in saying. A player must not use equipment or wear anything that is dangerous to themselves or another player, including any kind of jewellery.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sort of put hair clip into that? Area,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The advice extends to the wearing of hair clips and similar products, whether they be made of plastic or metal or similar materials. The advice to referees is that when they are inspecting players' footwear and kit before the game, they make a check to ensure that no jewellery or hair clips are being worn to ensure they are removed if this is the case. This advice is consistent with all aspects of Law 4 in ensuring players' equipment is safety.
To me, it's a danger to the player themselves, and it's a possible danger in extreme circumstances to other people on the field of play.
Mm. Whilst we're talking about hair clips, I think it's just a pertinent moment here to just remind colleagues about jewellery. Now, I'm pretty certain that we are on a high percentage here of making sure that players don't wear jewellery. But what you can't see, you can't take action against. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now that's one part of it. Let me use a personal experience here. Many years ago, in a local game here in the County Cup, I did a game between two teams, one from Bath and one from Bridgewater, and there was a very influential player who was tattooed from top to bottom. And he was a tall chap, about 6'2", 6'3", and he was tattooed top to bottom. And I noticed he was wearing a stud earring. And I made the approach during the game. I'd seen it after about 15, 20 minutes. And I know I checked all players before the game. But obviously players will do what they do just to sort of defy the authorities. I noticed this player was wearing a stud in his ear. And I said, to the player, would you mind taking it out, please? And I said, we're getting near half-time now. I said, so wait till half-time, but take it out as soon as you can. And I walked across at half time where they were having their cup of coffee, cup of tea, slice of orange and a cigarette, if that's what they were doing. And I went over to this player and I said, have you taken that earring out? Just to be safe. I don't want you getting an injury, a nasty injury, by the ball hitting you in the side of the head. He said, yeah, I have, ref. And I said, oh, thanks very much. And I walked away. And about 15 yards, I walked away. And he shouted out to me, ref, but you haven't seen this one. And he pulled up his shirt and his nipples were pierced. And so was his belly button with chains. And I'll never forget that.
No, I
don't think that player's ever taken up the whistle. But Boo Perkins in Bath, if you're listening to this podcast by some freak coincidence, you were that player. And I still remember the nipples were being pierced and they were chain linked, you know, by Finn Chain.
Oh, no.
You know,
he didn't have an Albert as well, did he?
No, I didn't see that. No, I wasn't looking for anything like that. But it highlighted that what you don't see, you can't deal with.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the message that came to me. And so I decided, rightly or wrongly, that I hadn't seen it.
Right, okay.
Otherwise, I would have had a bit of a difficult situation on my hands. So I didn't see it, but I know what was what. So I left it alone.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice confession there, Richard Mellon.
Yeah, that's a confession from Richard Mellon.
We should get a regular confession from Mellon.
A confessional corner. No.
Brilliant.
You don't want that.
Excellent. So there's your advice on hair clips. So we're slowly coming to the end of this episode of the Referees World podcast. Before we go, as we mentioned a short while back, Rich and I were invited to FA headquarters at Wembley the day before the FA Cup final this year. Great day out. Had a mooch around, got to see the pitch the day before and everything. It looked fabulous, it really did. And we hooked up with Roger Vaughan and Dean Moharab. Dean is national manager who looks after the volunteer FA workforce, the tutors, the assessors, the mentors and coaches. And Roger, also an FA national manager, he's responsible for recruitment, retention and education. And no stranger to the podcast. In fact, he was our very first guest on our very first podcast as well, which you can listen to if you've not heard them all before. Just search for Referees World on iTunes. So what they're going to talk about now is starting out as a referee and gaining experience, plus learning and developing with some advice and tips. And a question is also posed as to whether we expect too much too quickly.
This is Referees World.
Listen online at refereesworld.co.uk
or search iTunes for Referees World.
Dean Moharab, National Referee Development Manager, looking after the workforce. So tutors, assessors, coaches, mentors and RDOs. Started refereeing when I was 16, so 14 years ago now. I'm a football league referee, came through the junior leagues, onto the supply, contrib, then the panel. Heavily involved as a volunteer, even when I was young, sort of 16, 17, 18, did some administration for the local Sunday league, did the fixtures for a couple of years, did the appointments. So, you know, young people, it's a great opportunity to get involved and volunteer. And then from my own refereeing, obviously took up, like Rog, the instructor's course, went on the national course in 2005, was group tutored by Vince Hannon, learned a lot during that week, and with that and my teaching background, and then obviously taking one of the RDO positions when they came up in 2008, then working for the FA now.
And you're only 30?
Nearly 30.
Oh, nearly
30
Well.
Yeah.
You've done so much in football, where you talked about appointments of referees.
Yeah.
Now, how does that come into play with someone with limited experience in life and football?
I think people out there will relate to this. Whenever you have jobs, voluntary jobs, sometimes they're very difficult to fill. And certainly the local Sunday League, which I started off in, which was the Hyden District Sunday League, we had one guy on the committee who did lots and lots of jobs. And then suddenly and sadly, he passed away and the jobs had to be filled up. And I took on a role there, which I thought was going to be for 12 months, ended up being about 5 years. But I've got to say, I absolutely loved it. And without volunteers in this country, football and refereeing would collapse. So it's a real passion of mine to do the workforce role.
And we're going to come on to the workforce role when you're in your job with the FA at the moment. Previously, your background, I did hear the word teaching.
Yes, I was. I graduated from the University of Leeds in 2004. I was a primary school teacher in Oldham for 3 years, and then I came out of teaching to take up one of the RDO jobs in 2008.
Football League referee. Let's briefly talk about that.
Yes.
The
application and commitment from yourself. Where was the main focus? Where were the tough points? Very briefly.
My belief is that the tough points are coming through the system. So if you look at the support that there is now, and Roger will talk later on about the National Referee Development Programme, the support that there is out there now for referees is fantastic. I would say to referees out there, don't expect too much too quickly. If you can get a good ground in 3 or 4 seasons at Supplier League level, Contrib level and Panel level, it makes you ready for that transition when you come onto the national list. And I was fortunate because it took me 12 seasons to get to the national list, and each one of those 12 seasons has made me a better referee. So I think the tough points are early on. But that's getting a lot better now, particularly with Roger's scheme and the NRDP.
I like the comment there where you said it took you 12 seasons and each season made you a better referee. There is a perception from some of our referees that they only need to be in there for a year or two or one season and they get promoted instantly because they're just a qualified referee in that bracket.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen as simple as that.
No, it doesn't. And I think, you know, whenever we set up schemes like academies, schools of excellences, what we do is increase the expectation of people, but we've got to manage that. And you're absolutely right, one season as a Supply League referee does not make you ready, in my opinion, to be a really good contributory league referee and then beyond. So the more experience you get, the better.
There's a lot of people that talk up the idea of fast tracking, and fast tracking does have a part to play in referee development, and I fully support it, where there is somebody with huge potential to move quickly. But it's very rare, that type of talent, isn't it?
It is, and I think what you've got to do is not only manage the referee but manage the life skills that the referee has, and particularly where you've got a young person. For me, the benefit is having a few seasons at a particular level and then coming through the system ready to cope with the demands in the professional game.
There are huge demands,
yeah, there are,
and,
yeah.
And you're experiencing that yourself. Coming to the end of your first year as a Football League referee,
yeah.
How have you found it?
Absolutely loved it. I signed off last Saturday at Yeovil, near you, Rich.
Yes, that's
playing what we did. Chesterfield, who unfortunately got relegated. But again, you know, all the experience I've had as an assistant referee on the Premier League, right down to sort of panel referee for 4 years, it's just made the transition so much easier. It's been really, really enjoyable.
That's great. And congratulations on that as well, Dean.
Thank you very
Successful
much.
First year.
Thank you.
You're talking about fast tracking. Could that be a dangerous thing? Because you could have somebody coming through the system who's got all the confidence, this, that and the other, comes onto the Supply League, has a bad first season and just knocks their confidence straight back. And you were just saying just now the importance of having 12 seasons to get to where you are now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's a fine balance. I think you've got to move people through the system when they're capable enough to do it, and some people will move quicker than others. But I do think, and we'll all know of examples where people have gone through the system and it's not quite worked out, and hopefully the National Referee Development Programme eradicates that now, because the support's there, we can manage expectations, and the information that we get from the coaches is fantastic.
And what advice would you give to a referee that's perhaps gone up through the system quite quick and then hit a brick wall really suddenly, because it is a kick in the pants? We've at some point in our career had a kick, because obviously, you know, you come off thinking you've had a great game and then suddenly somebody hits you with, well, that was wrong, that was wrong and that was wrong, and it knocks you back.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to somebody to, you know, pick themselves up after that?
I wouldn't see it as a brick wall, I'd see it as an opportunity. So if you've been at a particular level for 3, 4, 5 seasons or more, take the opportunities, go through your assessments, work with your coach, and make sure that on every game you're trying to put one thing right. Try not to do too much at once, and eventually promotion, success, cup finals, it will come naturally. You don't have to go looking for it. That would be my advice.
Can I just pick up and let's change some terminology there? There are no brick walls there. Is that, can we agree on that? There's no brick walls in football. The hurdles are sometimes a little bit more difficult to get over.
Yeah.
Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I do. And whether you are 16 or whether you're 56, the opportunities are there, and people will scoff at that, but if we look at this season's promotions, we've got a 52-year-old who's been promoted to the national list of assistant referees, and the level 4 to 3 nomination and promotions, we've got people in the 50s again. So, you know, for me, it doesn't matter about your age. If you have an aim or a goal or an ambition and it's realistic and it's measured, then for me, you can achieve it.
Roger Vaughan, National Referee Manager for Recruitment, Retention and Development, looking after the National Referee Development Programme specifically, and coaches, mentors, and the work with leagues involved in that programme.
Roger, let's come to you yourself, and particular areas within the National Referee Development Programme. Two focuses for you. Where would you like to place your focus at the moment?
Well, as you know, Rich, the programme is based around a number of stages, but in effect there's two stages. The first stage is supporting guys after their initial training to retain them, and then the second part is as they develop a bit to develop them further. So that's stage one and two, stage three and four. From my point of view, key piece of work for us going forward is the work we do with leagues, and Dean himself does work around that. We are trying to encourage county FAs, if they haven't done so already, to get a number of partner leagues that they can work with within their counties, where they can safely send their referees to do their first six games as part of their training, and then the remaining games in that first season, gain their confidence with a mentor supporting them, so that we know come the start of the new season, when they have to re-register, they enjoy their refereeing, they're confident, they're ready to go again for the next season. Biggest problem, as you know, Rich, from your experience when you were an RDO, is we lose so many in that initial spell that either don't complete their first six games, or they don't go after their first season for a poor experience without that support, and then we've lost them, and all the time and effort and support has gone down the drain.
Recruitment and retention, there's a little bit of overlap between yourself and Dean, isn't there? Because Dean will cover the workforce, and then we'll talk about the mentoring side of things like that.
Yeah.
But coming back to where you've just focused it, first six games are crucial for new referees, but we'd like to think that we can retain them through some sort of cooperation with the leagues.
Yes.
What sort of questions and debates are happening between the leagues themselves and you involved?
Well, ideally we've got criteria within the programme to become a partner league. Part of that criteria is being have a respect programme within the league, to having a referee appointments officer that is coordinating those initial appointments, because we all know that at the end of the day, on your first game, the last thing you want is to be sent out to a top of the table clash or a relegation battle or a bit of a local derby that's got a bit of spice on it that a more experienced referee might be able to deal with. But initially in that first game, it'll probably be too much. So we all know that you can't judge a game of football on the face of it. However, you can have a fair indication of what will be a very straightforward game on the face of it, and what potentially will be a lot harder.
Just to touch on a comment that you made there, Rog, everybody would love to have the Fausty games, or the fizzy games, as I might call them, but somebody has to do the mid-table stuff, don't they?
Absolutely.
So the focus for any referee is he must approach every game exactly the same method and attitude.
Absolutely.
So that's
right.
Vital for his personal success. Is that
absolutely right? And I think, you know, Dean's talked already about how important it is to learn as you develop your refereeing and learn from your experiences and each season improve. And I think part of that is increasing your professionalism. So whatever game you get given, you accept it and you deal with it in exactly the same way. Just the same way as we've met Phil and his team now. Phil will go out tomorrow and be totally professional as he is always, but it'd be just the same if you sent him out to do a local cup final in Staffordshire, which he did last year. So he won't have a different approach in terms of he go out and do a bit totally professionally either way.
Would you say it's a fair comment that those mid-table games that probably haven't got a lot going for them, you know, are the games where you're probably tested as a referee, because that's possibly a time when you let your guard down, and then that's when you get picked up on things, and then that's when all hell breaks loose?
It's very interesting for you to say that, Darren, because I watched a game only last week where exactly that happened. An end of season game, nothing on it, on the face of it, very straightforward, dead rubber. Referee went into it, talked about dealing with potential problems, but actually, you know, actions speak louder than words, and went into it quite laid back, and all of a sudden he had problems on his hands, and the game became a lot more challenging than it needed to, because players need managing, whatever the context of the game. And I think, you know, you've got to remember that you go into every game and approach it in exactly the same way. Sometimes you'll be pleasantly surprised, because actually a game that you think is going to be challenging won't be, because you've gone into it in the right approach. Equally, there'll be times you go into a game with a little bit more of a laid back approach, thinking everything's going to be fine, not doing your job properly, and lo and behold, things become a lot harder, and you end up having to work a lot harder as a result of it. So So I think that the message really is, whatever game you get, go into it, be professional, prepare for it, consider what's going to happen, and you won't go far wrong, I don't think.
I think that's good advice, Rog, because obviously the players, when they go out to win.
Absolutely.
Whether you're at grassroots or come into the Football League with players, they want to win. They will win at all costs if they can get away with it.
Yes.
So focus and detail, attitude for our referees is hugely important.
The download is complete.